I am speaking with Joe and Kathy Osman of Pawpaw. They have returned from Kenya, where they spent some time as election monitors for Kenyan elections, which were held earlier this year. Thank you very much for being here. Welcome back.
Thanks.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Thank you for having us here.
Explain to people what you were doing in Kenya. How does election monitoring work?
Well, we were official observers, and because we were from the U.S., we were considered international observers, which meant we had badges and authorization from the Electoral Commission to be in the polling station and watching what was going on. We had the authority to speak with the presiding officer there if we saw irregularities and bring those to that person's attention. We could not interact in any way or influence voters, and we had to be strictly nonpartisan. But we got to watch everything that went on, the voting process as well as the counting of the votes at that polling station at the end of the day.
What would be a red flag that you might look for if you're an election observer that might tell you that something was not being done on the up and up?
We were trained in the whole election process and the way it should go. One of the things that we did observe that we mentioned was that every political party is entitled to have an agent in the polling place as well. But they are there strictly to observe and to make sure that their party and their candidates are treated fairly. We saw some instances of agents speaking directly to voters, which is not permitted. And so we called that to the attention of the presiding officer, and he spoke to the agents, and it was corrected. Other problems that some of the observers noticed were, in one case, a clerk handing out multiple ballots to an individual, which is, of course, strictly forbidden and very much an irregularity. And that was called to the attention and stopped. Other things would be like making sure that the voters are properly identified, making sure that their fingers are inked after they vote to prevent them from coming back, and so on.
Are there things that make Kenyan elections different in how they're conducted from U.S. elections, or is the basic model pretty much the same?
The basic model is pretty similar in that there's multiple polling stations that are open for specific hours, and the voters come in and are checked off and have an opportunity to cast a secret ballot. Organizationally, they're somewhat different in that they have a National Elections Commission that manages the election for the entire country, rather than our model where we have usually the counties handle their own elections. So the Elections Commission was directly responsible for running 33,000 polling stations around the country, which was just a huge logistical task. I don't think that the U.S. would even attempt something like that.
Some of the other differences I'm thinking of, they have elections every 5 years, and that's everything. And now there's both national and county level positions that are being elected, and that was new with this election. The counties were new, so that they only do the elections once every 5 years, and they don't have interim elections like we do. Every year we have somebody that's being elected, so we have more of a rotating pattern of voting and holding office.
One other thing that I want to mention that was really very impressive was that the ballots are paper ballots that are marked by hand. They're not scanned by computer in any way. And in the polling station, after the polls close, then the ballots are counted by the election clerks with the observers and the agents present, and the counts are verified and very clear right there on site. That was an impressive process. It wasn't necessarily carried through, and there were some glitches along the way with possible discrepancies in reporting, But the counting process itself was really very well done.
Now, the elections were held and there was no mass violence reported this time, as there had been in previous elections in Kenya?
That's correct. And that was certainly the main reason that we were there. In just about every prior election since 1992, there was significant violence after the election. And 5 years ago, there was massive violence with over 1,100 people killed and over 600,000 people driven from their homes and placed temporarily in camps. So the country was severely traumatized, and that did not happen this year. This year the experience was very different.
So we felt very pleased and encouraged that our efforts, along with lots of other people, I mean, we were just a couple of people among thousands who were there working toward peace. The government had taken some steps. A lot of churches were preaching about peace and encouraging responsible voting. The media had a lot of promotion about keeping it peaceful. It was way, way less violent than any other election they've ever had.
Now, Mr. Kenyatta won a very close election, but there was no runoff required. And you were supposed to set some time there to stay long enough in case you had to be there for a runoff, correct?
Right. There was no runoff. The second place candidate did appeal to the Supreme Court because he felt there were significant irregularities. The Supreme Court found in Mr. Kenyatta's favor, and so the losing candidate said, well, so be it. I'll abide by the court's decision, which was certainly positive. We then were the organization that we were working through, the African Great Lakes Initiative, decided to give us an additional assignment for our last few weeks and sent us up to an area called Mount Elgon, which is pretty marginalized area. And 5 years ago, there had been a great deal of violence, not only associated with the election, but with a lot of land and tribal issues. And so AGLI, our organization, had invested a lot of time and effort in doing peace building and trauma healing and educational activities. And so we were sent up there to interview people and do an assessment of their work.
And what did you find up there?
Well, it was a very profound part of our experience there. To be out in a really rural area of significant poverty, people who even said we're not part of Kenya. Nobody treats us like we're part of Kenya. So any doubt that we were seeing the real Kenya was quickly dispelled. It was quite an experience, and we heard about a lot of stories of both personal trauma and damage that had been done to the culture and the community through the ethnic violence that had been their pattern for so long. But the encouraging thing we found was that the programs that had been done there, without exception, people felt had a positive effect. And those were primarily some trauma healing workshops and also civic and voter education to prepare people to participate in the election. They were very proud that it was the first time ever in their history they'd had a peaceful election, an orderly process. And not only that, but the outcome of the election showed, at least on the local races, that they were voting not strictly by ethnic group, that there was more of a real assessment of the qualities that each candidate brought to the office, and they elected quite a mixture of people, and they were very proud about that.
One of the other things that was just very impressive up there was that in the last few years, in continuing to today, there have been some scattered incidents of sporadic serious violence. But part of the response to that has been that some of the local people who have been trained in some of the healing workshops that Agley has done have gone in and done specific interventions in those circumstances to pull tribal groups together, to hold community meetings, to speak at funerals, and to encourage peace. And that really seems to have been effective. There have been no instances in which some of the violence that has occurred has resulted in cycles of revenge, which have been the pattern in the past.
So, election work aside, what is it like to go to a completely foreign country and spend several months there, probably not very familiar with the culture and the way that things work? What was that experience like for the two of you?
We were very privileged to be able to do that, and it's one of the reasons we sought out an opportunity like this. It was challenging and it was wonderful. The people there are so warm and welcoming and hospitable. Everywhere we went, I mean, we're obviously the white visitors, we were treated with a great deal of welcome. The people on the street would just walk up and say, "Welcome to Kenya. Thank you for coming." And the people we worked with, of course, took us into their homes and fed us and make sure we were safe and that we figured out how to navigate the public transportation and so forth. The country is also very beautiful, and we had the opportunity to do a safari the first week we were there, and then a guided tour of a rainforest area near the end of our time. We got to see wonderful animals and birds and the vegetation. It's a very beautiful place, so we enjoyed it a lot.
We also made just some wonderful connections with a lot of amazingly dedicated people. It was very hard to leave. We feel like we have some good friends there. Thanks to things like Facebook, we can stay in contact with a lot of them. But we were just, as Kathy said, so privileged to be there. Among the children, we were significant celebrities. Everywhere we went where there were children around, if we were in the more remote areas where they hardly ever saw white people, they would just kind of come up and stare. In our village where we lived, where we tripled the white population while we were there, the children would every time they would see us, we would hear shouts in the distance of "Mzungu," which means white foreigner, basically. And then they would say, "How are you?" And of course we'd respond, "I'm fine," which is the mandatory response. And they'd want to shake our hands, and we just felt so welcomed by all parts of the population.
You say tripled the white population, so there was one
right
person there, and then you showed up to make it three.
Right.
Okay.
Well, that was our supervisor and our host, which we did want to mention, David Zaremka. He is the founder and coordinator of African Great Lakes Initiative, and his home is the African office of the organization, and also where we lived the 3 months we were there in a little village called Lumakanda, western Kenya. So he has lived there for a while. He's married to Gladys, a Kenyan woman from that area, and they spend time in both countries. And so the people there know him and know his truck, and he's sort of their own Mzungu. But when we came, we tripled.
And we should mention that Dave will be here in Michigan, correct, soon?
He will be speaking in Kalamazoo, as it turns out, this coming Monday, the 20th. He will be talking in general about the work of the African Great Lakes Initiative and the peace building that they have done. They work in not just in Kenya, but in Rwanda and Burundi and Congo and Uganda. His talk is free and open to the public. It's going to be at the Kalamazoo Friends Meeting House at 508 Denner Street on Monday the 20th. So we'd certainly welcome people to come.
Starts at 7 p.m.
Wanted to ask you about creature comforts. Were there some things you missed? Now, as people who listen to this radio station know, we were able to Skype from Kenya, but were there some things that you didn't have in this small village that after a while, at least, you started to long for?
We did Skype, but the connection wasn't great. It was great to get back to the U.S. and to our Wi-Fi. We were using cellular modems over there, which were pretty slow. We lived in quite a bit of comfort in the as far as Kenya goes, in that we had a home with nice beds and we had toilets that you could sit down on, unlike most of them in the country. We did not have running water. The house was plumbed, but the village water system wasn't working. So bathing, it was a bucket system and so on. So we certainly relished our first hot showers when we got back home. We missed paved roads and there are some paved roads in Kenya, but not a lot. When we got back here, I'm kind of missing the occasional motorcycle taxi ride, but they were a little hair raising besides.
Kathy, anything you missed that you were glad to come back to, or anything you miss now that you've left Kenya?
Well, there's some of both. What I was just thinking about was having my own wheels again. Our host, David, had a truck, and so occasionally drove us places. But for the most part, we used public transportation like almost the entire population of the country does. Very few people own a vehicle. And they have very convenient public transportation, but very uncomfortable public transportation. The small minivans that are the primary means of travel are always jammed, packed. My favorite ride was when we were in one that had live chickens tied to the roof on their way to market. And there was a chicken's head hanging down right by my window, kind of squawking at me every once in a while. So there was, it was always crowded. It was always hot. It was usually pretty noisy. And that was challenging. And the motorbike rides were, I was always holding on for dear life, because once you get on a motorbike, you're on the side streets, which are even more problematic than the main arteries, and very, very steep, rutted, sometimes slippery and muddy if it's been raining. And so having my own wheels and a smooth pavement feels really good.
Okay. Anything else either of you want to add?
I think that back to the whole election thing, the country had made some impressive progress in that the election was peaceful and that they had an open election that resulted in a open transition of power from one administration to the next, which is not a negligible accomplishment in new democracies in third world countries these days. So that's very positive. On the other hand, there were some significant irregularities with the election. Our observation report showed that there were some definite irregularities and lots of opportunity for them to have happened that with systems that failed in the election, and that may not bode well for the future. It's also true that the candidates that were elected are somewhat problematic for president and deputy president, in that they both are under indictment by the International Criminal Court for allegedly inciting violence and paying for violence after the last election. So there's still there's still a lot to be done, and there's still a lot to be determined about the political future of Kenya. But I think that in net, this was positive.
Yeah. Also, on the level of the violence in the culture, there was much progress, and yet the roots of a lot of the violence are still there. When we interviewed people in Mount Elgon, one of the questions we asked was, what do you see that's still a risk that might cause violence in the future? And those inter-ethnic animosities are still there, even though progress has been made in cooperative communities. And many of the land issues there are very complex with various attempts to resettle people on different parts of the land and claims of ownership that overlap over many generations. So there's still a lot of work to do for people who are working for peace in the area. And as we expected, we made progress, but the work there isn't finished.
Kathy, Joe, thank you very much for your time.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having
us.